Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by the super patrons, and I'm about to shout them out. Thank you so much to Chester Copperpot, Jade, Jillian Morgan, Aaron Layton,
Ghost,
Andrew Gray, Casey McCain, Crystal Trujillo, Jen Robinson, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate, Kiki Newton, Stanton, Valerie, and Will Nash.
Bow, you shits!
The real war isn't between a few squabbling houses. It's between the living and the dead.
Winter is coming.
Why are all the gods such vicious cunts?
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
I'm the shield that guards the realms of men.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
I drink and I know things.
You're the worst shit in the Seven Kingdoms!
Death is the enemy. The first enemy and the last.
I am the god of jits and wine.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I am the Lord of Kisses.
And this is Streaming Things House of the Dragon, the first of its name podcast.
Long may it reign.
Yeah. I'm hyped up.
We're wearing the Conqueror's crown. We got the Conqueror's blade. We've been anointed by the Seven and
all
front of
signs of legitimacy point to Streaming Things.
Boom,
baby.
I just hit the mic stand because I'm so goddamn boom. Hyped.
No, you could have left that as like the door slamming closed in the hall.
Yep. Just
no more guests will be attending.
No
gong of the Septa Baylor.
Yes.
Septa Baylor doesn't exist yet.
Well, it should.
Dork.
God, I thought you were a fan, Andy.
Jesus, I need to learn the lore.
Fucking nerd.
We just finished watching episode 10, The Black Queen, the finale of season one of The House of the Dragon. And we are going to talk about it, baby. It's what we do here. If you're new, we're going to break down the episode play by play after getting some general spoiler free overall thoughts about the episode. And then after the play by play, we'll do what we call a dragon eggs segment. We'll talk about different lore tidbits, any kind of Easter eggs we could have found, references to the Game of Thrones show or back to the books, things like that. And then Valyrian Steel is the following segment. After that, we'll talk about our top three favorite moments each of
that
the episode.
Steal the episode.
Ooh, that
steal
is
the
a
show
homonym, right? Same
know
sound, different spelling.
I'm a
doesn't
podcaster
matter.
Yeah, I don't know the written language.
And then we'll end it with the Mummer's Dragon segment, where we talk about our favorite kind of MVP performance of the episode. Cap it off there.
Boom.
And we'll be doing a mailbag episode. So send in your emails to streamingthingspod@gmail.com as soon as you can, talking yes about, you know, any things that you might want to discuss about House of the Dragon throughout the whole season of coverage that maybe we didn't delve into enough, or you're not clear on some opinions you have, you disagree with us, things like that.
Or yeah, just to whisper sweet nothings into Steve's ear.
Oh, whisper indeed. Away, daddy. But yeah, get those in quick, because unlike normally, usually we record on Sundays, like we're recording this right now.
Right now, it's Sunday.
Next week, we will be doing our recording on Friday. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get your email read on next week's mailbag episode, make sure you send that email in before the end of, or before Friday, really.
Yeah, post haste.
Yeah, post haste. Get on a dragon. Ravens aren't fast enough. Dragons are quicker. Send them in.
Mm-hmm. And they're more intimidating. So we're more likely to read your email.
I don't know. Ravens like no faces and they hold grudges. So
don't fuck with ravens.
Ravens are weird.
Yeah.
That's what they sound like. Nobody likes them. Not a blood raven though. What if it's just a guy tied to a tree that arrives at the door? It's took me forever to bring this.
Lors Van Tekka.
Is the mailbag over?
Yes. Is that his name? Lors Van Tekka?
I don't know.
Or maybe that was his character name in Star Wars.
Who? That sounds like a Star Wars
name. The guy who played Blood Raven in Game of Thrones.
If it's Darth something, it's definitely Star Wars. That's all I know. Damn it. But we just finished the episode. And I'll be honest, you guys, the episode leaked a couple of days ago and I didn't watch it because I'm not.
I thought you were about to admit that you watched it. Like you've been holding it in this whole time.
No. But I'm just saying there was a lot of.
Sorry. The actor I'm thinking of is Max von Sydow.
Yeah. Max von Sydow.
Lors Van Tekka is his Star Wars character's name. So sorry, Max.
Getting your fandoms mixed up.
I know.
And I had heard a lot of bad things about this episode. People were disappointed. There was huge departures from the original book, blah, 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 blah. And even though I was like, part of me was a little worried, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, are they really going to drop the ball at this stage in the game? You can't do that.
Important episode.
You can't do that. We've been 9 solid episodes in my humble opinion. But I got to say, well, I won't say how I felt about the episode, but I just want to throw that out there. So that being known, Steve, you finished it a mere 10, 15 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the finale?
Well, I wasn't here last week. Last week's episode was the first time I think this episode has sort of shown any sort of like, cause it's been pretty faithful to the books for the most part. Mm-hmm. And the things that they've changed have been like very clever, kind of like, oh, technically that is book faithful, but cause you know, the book plays fast and loose with what historical, sure. Mm-hmm. Like who writes history. Right. And they have biased opinions and whatnot. And I think last week's episode was the first time like, wow, they're fucking going bonkers on some stuff. I'm here for it. This is crazy. I'm loving it. There's one thing that happens in that episode. That's muddying the waters a bit too much for my blood, but whatever. I still like the episode for the most
part. What was it?
It was Maelys coming through the floor of the dragon pit.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That just added an unnecessary. Like I know what they're doing. They're setting up a big event that happens probably three seasons from now. But it also is
and they needed a fake penultimate thing, and this isn't that kind of story yet.
That was the most season 8 Game of Thrones thing they've done so far. With like, oh, the audience is going to get bored. We need a big thing.
Yeah.
So have the dragon blow up the bottom of it's like, why should it would have been way better. And if the scene was more subtle where the dragon kind of slinks out of the shat, like a hallway and like, oh, like fuck,
Die Hard style
where it just kind of like, it kind of more like walks out in front of everybody and like everyone
Rhaenys is John McClane.
Yeah. She's like,
and she doesn't need to light a lighter because she's got a dragon.
And Maelys is like, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. but that's not here nor there, because this episode was a kind of, it was pretty, I thought it was for the most part, pretty faithful to the book, which is totally fine. However, and I still liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought this was a good episode, but that being said, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I feel like it kind of was a wet noodle of a season ending. Cause even though we've been kind of anticipating this big, huge event to kind of cap off this season, and we were right. I don't know if we actually talked about it on the podcast, but we kind of mentioned, I know we've talked back and forth off air, like, oh, I think this event's going to close
the Storm's End event. Yeah.
Yeah. What happens in Storm's End. And we were right. But the way they kind of filmed it and the way it kind of ends, it was just kind of like, oh, this feels more like a penultimate episode mm-hmm. to another episode and not the season finale. And so I would be lying if I said when it ended, I was kind of like, oh, I mean, okay. I mean, I'm not unhappy because I wanted to see that and I was happy to see it. And I thought it was cool, but it just kind of didn't have that legitimacy of a finale weight to it. It did not have the Conqueror's Blade. It did not have a Conqueror's Crown. It was the Rhaenyra, Hainon Dragonstone of finale episodes.
So it was the rightful finale.
Well, I see what you did there.
Damn it. You hoisted me on my own petard on that one, but you know what I'm saying, right? It's kind of like luster I felt like for a season finale, but that all being said,
you're laying it down. I'm picking it up.
I still think it was a really solid episode and I liked what I saw. And I'm happy with it overall. I just wish there was one more little cat.
I can't
more
wait episode. Till we rank these episodes. You know, motherfuckers love ranking.
We're going to have numbers. We're going to circle things with red circles. It's going to be off the chain.
There's going to be arrows pointing at things.
Oh, there's Mephisto.
Andy, what did you think of episode 10, The Black Queen?
I 100% agree with what Steve had said, that this felt like the penultimate episode. Like this should have been that. And we should have seen like the repercussions of this episode on a different episode that would serve as the finale. That said, it is the finale. And so for what we got, I thought it was fantastic. I think this is probably the most beautiful episode. It had some of the most wonderful imagery that we've seen for the entire fucking show. Some absolutely gangbusters performances from several people. And we'll talk about that when we get to our Mummer's Dragon. But there's quite a few people that it definitely could be. We'll talk about it when we get to it. But there are instances where it strays from the lore and I think for the better. And I don't know if it necessarily does stray from the lore, because like Steve said, it is, you know, it's an interpretation of events that happened, and this is supposed to be what really happened. And I thoroughly enjoyed all of it. And there was so much like menace and foreboding going into this episode. And like the music was beautiful and was really helped to enhance that feeling throughout the whole thing. And I thought this was plotted perfectly. When it was done, I was like, I turned to Chris. I was like, was that like the shortest episode, or did it just fucking fly by?
Fly by.
It felt like a 20, 30 minute episode, and it wasn't. It was a full hour just like the rest, but I thought it was fantastic.
That's a sign of a good show, and it seems to go by too quickly. I love this episode, and I understand what you guys are saying. I concur, but at the same time, I think it's like the email we got for the Rings of Power mailbag, which may or may not have aired yet. You know,
we'll have not.
The success of a season one is measured largely by how excited you are for season two, right? Mm-hmm. And I could not be more excited for season two. And I think it's funny. And again, I don't mean to like, this show is not like devoid of any criticism whatsoever, like, or immune to any, right? Sure. By any means. Yeah. I know that I've pretty much been a shill for this show just because I love it so much and this universe so much. But a lot of the criticism I've heard is that it's moving too quickly. But at the same time, by those same people, probably, it's like, oh, it drags a little bit. Like, there's too much talking in rooms. It's always in King's Landing. Game of Thrones was so spread out.
Talking in rooms in Game of Thrones.
There's so much garden conniving in this show.
Love a garden.
Give it to me.
But at the same time, it's like, if you were going to move it any faster, obviously that would piss people off. But if you moved it any slower, where would the finale be? You know, like, I think they did measure it. And this show had an interesting task to set up this dance with dragons, but there's so much like generational context. Yeah. And you can't trust everybody to be super nerds like some of us are, right? And oh, you got to read World of Ice and Fire, you got to read Fire and Blood, and then this show's gonna be dope, you know? So they had to set it up, and that's what this season did. And I think they smashed it. They knocked it out of the park for setting that up, this like generational context for the real conflict. They gave you enough. There's enough juice. There's tons of juice in this season, right?
It's juicy as fuck.
It's got the juice.
This, can't imagine a more beautiful thing.
This season was corn, right?
It's corn. Counterpoint.
Okay.
I don't disagree with you, but I could see a world where the finale was King Viserys dying. Or around that time. And then you spend a couple more episodes kind of fleshing out some of the other characters. Like, we haven't seen Daemon.
So not the finale?
What? No, I'm arguing that if you wanted, you could take this show a little slower than it has been going, where the finale was Viserys dying. Oh, so like two episodes
take
ago.
Take more episodes before that is what you're about to say.
Yeah, and then add more in front of that so you can introduce, because we haven't seen Daeron, and that is a very important character for later on in the story, and he's around.
Daeron the Daring.
And they haven't even really, I don't think they've mentioned Daeron at all. Even though,
best like, not, since they're not going to show him.
They haven't.
Daeron is the Dilly.
When
the
he
future
shows
Dilly.
Up, we're going to be like,
like, who the fuck is that? But I think a case could be made where you can flesh some of these more these characters out a little bit more. Like you can give Harold Westerling some more lines. So what, we care about him please. More. We could give, because I'm sure people watch the show, they don't know who the fuck Jasper Wilde is, even though he's on the council being Iron Rod and we don't know what he's doing.
We need to see how he got that name.
Yeah, we need to know.
There's really not enough dicks in this show. Again, that's my one criticism.
No, there needs to be more. I'm not disagreeing with you, like I said, because I love the show just as it is, but I'm saying I think there is a
what I would have liked to have seen more of is and I don't even think you could add more episodes, though. You could have done this with an extra few minutes per episode, but I would have liked to have seen more of the relationship between Sir Harwin and Rhaenyra.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. I would have loved that. I would have liked to have seen more of Daemon being a good father to his daughters.
Balin, Rhaena.
Because they cut. They filmed screens. These moments.
Yeah, we've seen screenshots of it. It's sad.
Stuff like that. But I identify what you guys are saying. I recognize it. And I agree in the sense like, oh, I could see that. But I do think that the pacing for me was almost perfect. Like you said, I mean, before the show even aired, we called the timeline of where like, oh, if I was writing this, I would end it here. That'd be a good like finale. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm disappointed that I have to wait likely a year and a half. Right. But maybe not. Aren't they already filming?
Pretty sure they are.
Rings of Power is definitely filming.
Oh yeah.
That's the one that's
yeah. Rings of Power started filming on the second.
In a perfect world, we could get season two late 2023, but I doubt it. Mm-hmm. In a perfect world. So anyway, so that sucks. Right. But, I'm very much looking forward to it. I think that I love this episode. It sounds like the most of the three. Mm-hmm. There's just a few smaller things like my Valyrian steals were like literal tiny moments. And I was trying to like, not be a douche and be like, are you not going to put the dragon race in there? Is that real? You know? And that's what took me so long. I was like, is that real? That was cool. But anyhoozle, let's dive right in. Okay.
So
the episode opens with the painted table, elsewise known as Stannis's fuck pad.
Damn it, dude. My first dragon egg already gone.
Look into the literally fire. What I wrote. Stannis Baratheon's fuck pad.
I stole that from Joanna Robinson when she was on hosted a Cast of Kings years ago.
Dang, great minds.
Storm of Spoilers, I think, is her other podcast about Game of Thrones. But she called it Stannis' fuck pad. Penny. And I was, yeah. I mean, she's the Game of Thrones expert.
But it when we see the painted table, it starts at Winterfell. It's just like a little nod, like, hey, the show used to be set here.
Yeah.
Show used to be set here.
and everywhere else, but I knew what you're saying. It was the focal point. Yeah. And we see Lucerys, Luke, touching Driftmark. He's like thinking about his new seat of power he'll have once Corlys passes away. Rhaenyra comes in to find him there, surmises on Corlys's death, right? Like that's Luke saying he's about to die. I'm going to have to be Lord of Driftmark. And I don't even like boats, bro. Like, what am I, a Numenorean? I fucking hate this shit. I get seasick. And so he's really nervous, doubtful of his own ability. And Rhaenyra admits that she was frightened when she knew she had to be the heir to the Seven Kingdoms. Like, hey, you don't have to like this shit. You know what I mean? It's duty, bro.
It's duty. Mm-hmm.
Don't be a little bitch about it, which is weird dialogue for this show, but I was like, I dig it.
A little tiny moment. I loved when she goes up and kisses him. She kissed him three times. Like, slow. Like
she's the lady of kisses.
It was such a like what? Sweet, realistic, motherly moment. You know what I mean? Like it's like, and then she kisses him as in the script. And then she, Emma Darcy does the, they made the decision to like, you know, be a little more tender about it. And I thought that was gorgeous.
And what's his name? Lucerys says, I'm not like you. So perfect. Right. So like he just has such adoration for his mother. Loved that moment. And she promises to protect him the way that Viserys has protected her in that heartbreaking promise that we all knew she couldn't keep for very long. And then
This is one of those episodes where if you know the story going,
they're just like, driving.
Oh, come on.
Heartbreaking.
Come on.
And Knight of the Kingsguard, Sir Laurent, brings word that Princess Rhaenys has arrived. And we know that she bears ill tidings. Rhaenys is welcome to the hall where stands Daemon and Rhaenyra. And she says first, I love this about Eve Best plays Rhaenys so well.
Oh, yeah.
She says Viserys is dead. Daemon does a slight turn of concern. And even though what the news that she bears is extremely time sensitive and important and dramatic, but she takes a beat to be kind about the death of her father, which she's aware that that's also the news that she brings.
Yeah, that's her cousin. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. she takes a moment. She could be like, holy shit!
It's a fucking kid!
And she wouldn't be blamed for reacting that way. But right. she's poised. She very calmly says, he possessed a kind heart. Like, she mourns for a moment with her family member, Rhaenyra, which I just thought that was such a nice touch.
And it was also a nice touch that when she entered the room, Rhaenyra was like, hey, I'm sorry. We hope that your husband gets better. It's like, we're not here for that. Viserys is dead.
Yes. Jump right to it. And Rhaenyra's womb hurts at the news. As soon as she's told that Aegon was crowned king, she gets the pains of what will be a stillbirth. And Daemon's voice was so soft for the first time, I think, ever. Even when he's like being really like kind or whatever to Rhaenyra in past episodes, he's like, how did he die? Like, he's just like weak, and he's the little brother for just a moment. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Daemon thinks immediately that they murdered him, right? They slew him.
Yeah. How did he die? The queen killed him.
Dude, his face was half melted. How did he die?
Rhaenys is like, I cannot say, but like, you were there.
Yeah, I think he finished melting. That's what the maesters are saying. We're not sure.
The maesters came out and they just said, he's done.
Have you seen The Dark Knight? He kind of looked like Two-Face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he got really obsessed with a coin. It was weird.
And Daemon's mad that Rhaenys didn't burn them, which I thought was cool, because that's how like most of the audience was feeling at the uh-huh. at the end of the finale or yeah. the penultimate episode.
It's weird, because like the whole, and again, I wasn't here last week, so I have things to say about this, is like the whole her not killing them bit is so fitting for her character, and like the whole discussion that she was having with Alicent beforehand and what Alicent was trying to do, because the show is painting specifically these three women, Alicent, Rhaenyra, and Rhaenys, as these are the people who should be leading Westeros, because everyone else is like, let's go to fucking war. Let's go to fucking war. I love feet. Let's go to fucking war. And these are the only three people who are trying to hold the realm together and not go into war. So people are like, it doesn't make sense that she wouldn't burn her family. And it's like, well, A, that's her family. Kinslaying is a huge taboo in this world. B, she is trusting in Alicent, who has won Aegon's favor. And she's trusting, like, you are going to work for peace. Let me go to Rhaenyra and try to get her on the same page, because they don't want people to fall into war. Even, and then I do see how, and that's the thing I didn't like about the last episode, is that whole conceit falls apart when Maelys rips to the floor and kills like 50 people.
Yeah.
Well, I actually like that. I think that George Martin's tact throughout all of his stories has always been, none of these people are good, you stupid bastards. Mm-hmm. They shit all over small folk. They think they're God's gift to men and humans, and like the Targaryens specifically feel like they're not even men. And so no, even Rhaenys, who's awesome, has no regard for the lives of peasants. And
sure, but when she's actively trying to, like, everyone's trying to go to war and she's the only one who's smart enough not to want to go to war, it's like, why don't they want to go to war? Because they don't want the realm to burn.
It doesn't mesh well, for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can easily see that as being like the point of that scene, watching the dragons stomp those people, right? Dynasty had to go. But I think that after the episode talk, which we actually watched for once because you weren't here and the kids will play, it continues to just confuse people about trying to interpret things. Like that whole stupid ass thing that they did where they said, oh, Daemon couldn't get it up, and that's why he was mad. That didn't make any sense for either of their characters. It ruined the scene. It's not my headcanon. Right. And that one, I don't know if you eventually watched it.
I did not.
Ryan Condal claimed that Rhaenys wanted to kill them all, but refused to because she couldn't do that to another mother. And they had like this motherly bond. And that's what he was sitting there talking about.
I mean,
and,
sure,
and
everybody, I'm sure that's part of it.
But why does he sit in there talking? Sarah Hess wrote the show. And then I forget the name, but a woman directed it. And like, you just got Ryan there like, cue cards, mother. You know, mother of dragons,
mothers.
Am I right, day, boys?
Ladies? Mothers, am I right, guys?
This show's for you.
Anyway, we digress. But I agree with you, Steve. It was very clearly like a, you guys want dragons, you know, moment. But I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I got to tell you that. So anyway, Daemon's pissed that she didn't burn them all, and she says, "Hey, it's not my war to start," which is a very good point.
Very good line.
And then she says, the greens are coming. And then Rhaenyra says, the babe is coming. And we meet Maester Gerardus is in this episode several times. He's a guy from the book. Yeah,
Maester G. And he's a real G when it comes to the blacks, right?
He should have had a bigger role in this episode. That was one of the slight changes that they made. And by the way, Andy touched on it too. Anytime that there's changes from Fire and Blood, it's really not a change. And if you see somebody like vehemently angry about, you know, not following the canon, remind them that George Martin had a huge part in developing the show. He's one of the creators, like a show creator. Like he was in a room with Ryan Condal planning out all of this stuff himself. And he has said that the book Fire and Blood was written, and we've said this several times, from the point of view of multiple biased characters in the world itself. So what's written in there is not what happened. It's what's cleverly written down in the history books. And all the slight changes that you see are supposed to be considered the objective truth of what actually happened.
Right. Because history books often don't get the human objective truth of the moment.
Telephone game, but also history is written by the victors.
Yeah.
And can you imagine telephone game before they even knew what telephones were?
Yeah, it'd be weird.
Like they play Raven.
Why did we call it this?
You guys want to play Raven game?
No, man. Those things remember faces. I can't go outside. I pissed one off.
So the Black Council convenes during like an early birth. That, you know, the Maester says, "Hey, it's months before she's actually due. This isn't going to end well, right?" And then Daemon's talking about how we can make ourselves appear stronger, make it look like we have more like military strength than we actually have. Cause they only have like 430 fighting men on Dragonstone itself. And they don't know who their allies are yet.
Conscript the Dragon Keepers.
Yes. And like dress them up like soldiers, basically like the old guys that train the dragons.
Yeah.
And then Jace is out trying to train Luke. It's the first time we've seen these boys fighting, because we've seen Aegon and specifically Aemon training a lot. But we haven't seen Jace and Luke learning to fight. So this is
not for a while, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. He's out there trying to train Luke. He's being too rough with him. One of the Kingsguard, I think, is like, perhaps he would learn better if you weren't such a dick.
Quit beating his ass.
I think that was Lord Stefan.
Stefan, the oldest Kingsguard guy.
The older one of the two.
And then Rhaenys, is it Rhaenys or Rhaenyra that tells the
Rhaenys.
Boys?
Rhaenys.
Yeah, Rhaenys tells the boys of Viserys' death.
Well, she says, you need to come in, your mom needs to speak to you. And then the mom, in the middle of her labor, pains, is saying,
This is what's
happening. It's real fucked up.
And then they ask where Daemon is. And she's like, I don't know. He's gone to madness, gone to start his war. Mm-hmm. Right.
I love how Jace is like, leave Daemon to me. Like,
I'll handle him. Definitely won't, bro.
Jace is a bro.
He handles zero of Daemon in the next scene.
Absolutely none.
But you got to give him points for trying.
Yeah, he's a strapping young lad. And she tells Jace, Rhaenyra tells Jace, you are its heir, like the Seven Kingdoms. You know, and by the way, to make sure everybody knows, naught is to be done but by my command.
What right? claim I have left, you are its heir. It's so good.
There we go. That was way better than what I said.
Claim's yours.
And we also hear that Corlys is recovered.
Is king later.
He's leaving Evenfall. So Corlys is going to be fine. Luke can chill. In the next scene, Jace stands up to Daemon. He's like, my mommy said you can't do that. And he's like, patrol the skies on Vermax. I'm glad you're here. And he's like, no, mommy said you can't do that. I'm serious. And Daemon says, come with me. I'll show you the true meaning of loyalty.
We had a couple introductions to some characters in the scene, too. We learned about Lord,
pop it off, baby.
Bartimos. He's there. Do we know where Lord Bartimos is from?
I don't personally know. I did write the name down, Lord Bartimos.
I can't remember. But they're really kind of saying, hey, we got our allies, the Darkleys, the Masseys, the Bar Emmons.
Darklands,
sorry. Oh, autocorrect, you failed me.
Super failed.
This is a terrible show for autocorrect.
Yeah. It's the worst, man.
I can't tell you how many times I would write like Bar Emmon or something, and it'd be like, Bar at 11?
Dude, Eric and Eric is just hit every time.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call him A&E.
Yeah, A&E. That's a good, I like that one. But yeah, he says, I'll show you what loyalty is. And we get a great scene where Daemon's kind of like on like a little bit of a hill, and the two Kingsguard, Lord Stefan and or Sir Stefan and Sir Laurent.
He says, I have the high ground.
And he says, I have the high ground. It's over, Anakin. And he's basically like, hey, who are you loyal to? And they're like, oh, you, sir. He's like, you sure about that? And they're like, yeah. no reason to feel bad about us being traitors. And then he's like, good. And then Caraxes, the big red newly boy, comes walking down, looking like a G, looking like a beautiful thoroughbred. I mean, look at that thing. That's going to win best in show every time. I don't care if he has a goofy neck and fucked up legs. Give him everything in the world. He has that weird, like, noise that he comes out with. I love Caraxes so much.
So Lord Bardamos is Lord Bardamos Celtigar, who is loyal to House Baratheon.
Okay.
So that's of Claw Isle.
Are the Celtigars, they are also from Valyria?
No.
Is that them? What is the third house from Valyria?
Is there a third one?
There is. There is a third really lesser house.
They're the crabby boys, the Celtigars. They got little crabs.
It begins with a crabs. C. I thought it was Celtigar, but it might be someone else. But there is a third Valyrian house that just is nowhere near as powerful as the Valyrians and the Targaryens.
I didn't remember knowing that, to be for real with you, bruh. And so we already talked about Caraxes, the big noodly boy, right? Where did you end with him threatening with the ultimatum with the Kingsguard?
The Caraxes came in up looking like a goddamn third. Bread looking like so beautiful, and then you're right. Awesome.
House Celtigar.
Is Celtigar the third Valyrian house?
Right.
Boom, boom, boom.
And
shit.
House Koharis, which was formerly the Lord of Harrenhal, so they're gone.
But I love this shot where it's Daemon. He's kind of filmed in the cowboy shot, so it's like about thigh up, and then you see, and he's
cowboy shot.
Yeah, that's what they call it because you got to see their holsters.
Yeah, baby.
it's him, and he's on the far right of the screen, and then Caraxes' head is just filling the rest of the screen in the background. It's such a good shot. I love it so much,
and I love that he's like choose. But not much of a choice, right?
Yeah. Cheers.
And it's intercut with Rhaenyra's stillbirth. Did you talk about that? I was Googling Celtigar.
No, I'm begging you to listen to the show.
All of this was intercut with Rhaenyra's stillbirth. And she's
shown in great detail.
Again, this is what the third
dude,
like more than three births, but like the third, like brutally, brutal explicit birth
scene. Yeah.
Like my wife texts me like, what the fuck is with this show? Yeah. Cause she just had our daughter. And so that she's extra sensitive to that stuff. I can't imagine. I do think, and I'm a man, so who gives a fuck, but I do think it's really important and neat that they're being so brutal with the births. Cause like we've talked about this before, but so many movies are just like
they shy away.
Dad's out smoking a cigar, makes a couple jokes to the wife. Like, can you put an extra stitch in there for me? And like, it's over in 2 seconds and then they have a baby. Right. And it's like, this is like dangerous, especially in times where there's no medicine or anything, but even now, like it's something that could potentially kill the woman. It's a very serious birth is a very serious medical issue. It's an ailment.
Don't know if you guys knew that,
but yeah, she's a soldier. She just squats, yanks out her own stillborn baby. And even all the handmaidens and shit are like,
it like plops on the floor.
It's kind of fucked up. See the little leg and it's terrible.
I thought it was interesting that it kept like going to quick flashes to Cyrax also. That was really interesting.
Well, they've shown multiple times in this episode that there's like a psychic connection between dragon and dragon rider.
They wargs.
Not just, what was the other moment that I was thinking of where it was like the dragon was nowhere near, but it was clearly in distress just because the owner was, it wasn't Cyrax on the bridge.
Well, that one time when Daemon got hit with an arrow and Caraxes was like, that also hurts me.
Yeah. That episode on the Stepstones, but even just in this episode, it doesn't matter. Either way, they're definitely establishing some sort of psychic connection between dragon rider and dragon. But yes, the baby was born, stillborn. There's a heartbreaking long moment where the handmaidens are horrified. Rhaenyra is looking at the baby. And then we get a little bit of a preparation of the baby body with the Silent Sisters and her kind of praying and crying and weeping over the baby's corpse. And then a short baby funeral that is interrupted by the arrival of Sir Eric with an E of the Kingsguard. Everybody's suspicious that he is beholden to King Aegon II. And he says, hey, I'm not trying to do anything. Chill. Everybody, be cool. The Kingsguard draw their swords.
I'm Eric, not Auric. All right.
It's very easy. The guy who looks just like me and has the same name does want to kill you. I do not. I can be trusted. And he brings the crown. He brings the crown that was on Viserys's head and presents it to Daemon. Daemon holds the crown and considers it for a long while. I thought that was an interesting touch. Like this could have kind of this could have been mine vibe. Did you guys pick up on that?
Absolutely.
I thought it was a very layered moment because I definitely picked up on this could be mine, but I also got a lot of like, this was also my brother's and I'm sad boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matt Smith, man. He's got a long future ahead of him. I feel like he's going to be somebody.
That kid's going places.
He should be the next Doctor.
He should.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Damon ends up crowning Rhaenyra. He makes the choice. Everyone kneels except Rhaenys, I believe, just stands there kind of smiling.
That was interesting.
And it was kind of a red herring, it turns out, because she becomes the most ardent supporter of Rhaenyra in this episode. Right. Do you feel like that was kind of out of a cheap move to make you think, what's she going to do? Like, if you hadn't read the books, you'd be like, oh, she ain't kneeling. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you're talking like that, but
I don't know
about how Steve talks when he gets really.
I think that she was kind of feeling the same way that Corlys is revealed to be here shortly, where it's like, should we be taking a side? You know,
she's very protective of her own house for sure.
She's going to bust out that chair. Yeah. And just sit down with her popcorn.
But she gets crowned, and we go back to Stannis's fuck pad, aka the painted table. And for those who don't know, I mean, it's a map of Westeros. It was a table originally used by Aegon the Conqueror, right? We never knew it lights up. It's a Christmas table.
Dude, it was so dope.
That was a cool moment. So I almost put this on my
there.
Yeah, they like there's a little candle hole, which I can assume Stannis uses when Melisandre's not around. And like they light it up, and it, underneath it's like the names of the towns and cities and areas and stuff light up, and so cool. I almost put this on my Valyrian steels, just the table lighting up. I thought it was so cool. I want that table. Uh-huh. If they sell one, patrons, hook me up
for real.
And Damon kind of heralds Rhaenyra, his wife, the queen. And it's really neat because he does like the Lord and Protector of the Seven Kingdoms and Protector of the Realm, mm-hmm. King of the Or, yeah, Queen of the Andals and the First Men. Doesn't matter. Switches it around for the female perspective, but he heralds her. And he pointed out, do you want to use that in Dragon Eggs?
I'll save it for that.
I did notice that I thought it was a nice touch. Like after he does that, she's walking in. I think her guards try to walk with her, and she's like, no, guys, I need space. I'm with my people. She summons Rhaena, and I guess Rhaena is her cupbearer, which I thought was an interesting choice. And as she gets to the table, she's like, no, Bailey, you family, get in here too.
Yeah.
You're in on this. Rhaena shows up and offers her the wine, and she starts to reach and hesitates and then takes it. And it's like immediately she has to be on her guard now that she is the queen. And so that was like, I think a hesitation, like, can I trust you? I guess. And, you know, takes the cup.
I mean, that's Damon. That's her stepdaughter, right?
Sure. But I mean, it's her half brother that just stole her.
True.
Kingdom.
But he's a fuck.
Yeah, but he's a fuck boy. And she knows Rhaena. Like those kids have grown up with them.
It might have been like, I used to be you, because she was the cupbearer for the small council for her father.
Yeah, yeah. Could be.
Might have been like a,
oh shit, you might be queen someday.
Yeah, the way this is going, probably pretty soon.
I started also at the bottom. Also here.
Now we're both here at this shithole of a rock castle.
Now I'm frozen.
And this is where, do we give up at this point?
Fuck yeah.
This is where Damon says that there's, I got the count memory. I think it was 30 knights, 100 crossbowmen, and 300 like men at arms, mm-hmm. right? So there's 430 fighting men on the island. And he's going to ask for support from the city watch. He doesn't know how many are going to be loyal. And so they're discussing allies and enemies and kind of taking stock of the situation. They discuss which houses are going to support them. House Tully is mentioned. That's a cool little tidbit. Grover Tully is mentioned specifically. He's easily swayed, Rhaenyra says. And there's a little bit of tension because Damon keeps kind of trying to take control. And Rhaenyra,
I'll trade with him myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Rhaenyra keeps trying to rein him back in. The Starks are mentioned. Boros Baratheon is mentioned. He's the son of Boromund, who's the Baratheon that we've met thus far.
Yeah, you'll remember him. He was in episode one. He was the one like, cousin, the queen who never, what does he call Rhaenys? The cousin or the queen that never was? Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the queen who never was.
Yeah, he was Rhaenys' favor in the tourney.
He was also the one that was hesitant to swear fealty to Rhaenyra.
He was. And also he was with Rhaenyra during the
tour of suitors.
Yeah, it's where the kid like killed the one.
Oh, Bracken and Blackwood.
Yeah.
Yep, that was funny.
Yeah.
She's got a dragon, you cunt.
It's so funny because like that dude did not look like he was old. And then in this episode, yeah, he's fucking dead. He's old.
Yeah, so Lord Boromund Baratheon died in one of the time jumps off screen. And Corlys is sailing for Dragonstone. And then they start listing enemies because that was all their allies. The Lannisters, definitely not our friends. And then one of the guys interrupts. Is that, what's his face? Bortimus Celtigar that says,
Bortimus.
forgive me, Your Grace, Artemis. But who cares about men? You have fucking dragons, like tons of fucking dragons.
That's dope.
They're like, well, they have dragons too. And then Daemon starts to list all the dragons they have. We have more adults. They have what, three? Yeah. Maybe four. And then he's like, hey, we got blah, blah, blah. Arax, Varax, Emax, Vermax, Cyrax, Smoke,
I think the
Scorpion,
Katana,
yeah.
Sub-Zero. I think the count was 9 to 4.
Yep.
13 to 4.
Well, once they start counting the ones that don't have riders.
And yeah.
I think the wild ones.
Because Sea Smoke and Silverwing and Vermithor and... some of the wild ones don't have, there's a lot of them that don't have riders.
I was going to save it for Dragon Eggs, but I have a list of every single dragon and who their riders are.
Well, you can bust that nut over in Dragon Eggs section if you want to.
We'll save that for later.
Okay. I apologize for that idiom I used, by the way. I regret it wholeheartedly. I want you to know. Yeah. And then they're talking about dragons, and then they see a ship arriving with the banner of a three-headed green dragon. Mm-hmm. So they've already made their own, fucking, what's it called?
I thought this said three-headed gold
dragon. Sigil?
I could, green makes more sense, right?
I'm pretty sure the three-headed gold dragon was in the crowning ceremony.
For real?
Yeah.
Do I look like a dummy right now?
I don't know.
Edit over this and just say, I am super cool. I heard.
I am super cool.
I mean, I heard green, but I'm most 99% wrong. Otto arrives, just like in the scene when Daemon took the egg and they were going to get back from him. Remember that? It was like on the same bridge. I just thought that was neat.
Yeah.
And also there's the whole dragon thing.
That was again. A dragon egg for me.
And then he's like, where's Rhaenyra? Aw. And she rides Cyrax, flies around, lands behind them, and then walks slowly through them like, hello. And basically the Alicent's terms, or Aegon's supposedly's terms, are to offer to let, and honestly, I gotta be honest, guys, I love Rhaenyra. I stan Rhaenyra. That's my queen. I'll die for her. I am the man who knelt and will kneel always until she tells me to get up.
Who knelt.
I'm gonna kneel until she steps on me. However,
mommy,
the terms that she receives are pretty, you know,
they're good. Them's good terms.
She gets to stay Lady of Dragonstone. She, you know, her kids will have high honors at court, which they'll be hostages. Let's be honest. Right.
Yeah.
But every knight and lord that's currently supporting Rhaenyra will be pardoned. That's pretty.
Luke will get Driftmark.
Luke will still get Driftmark. Exactly. Like these are very good terms, and they wouldn't taste bad at all.
Yeah. They're even talked about, like little Viserys and little Aegon the Younger will also, like, Viserys will be the cupbearer.
Yes. Well, yeah. those are hostages. Those are medieval ways of taking hostages.
True.
But they'll
have standing. High positions in court.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And like Daemon keeps trying to shit on this negotiation at every turn, or I could just fuck your mother. You know, he's just piping in like, damn, man. And Rhaenyra keeps trying to get him to chill out, but she's pretty angry herself. And then the greens, I can't believe they exist. It's gross. I vomited a little bit. Give me a second.
The greens take their gum and put it under the seat.
Well, I was thinking the greens at home are probably cheering Otto, because even I thought Otto nailed it in this scene, right? Like, he's like, we have the ancestral sword Blackfyre. We have the conqueror's crown. We have the throne. Everyone has witnessed it. His name is the same fucking name as the conqueror. Mm-hmm. We have every ounce of legitimacy that you could have.
Been blessed by the septums.
Every symbol of legitimacy, right? And that's all he knows. He's being honest. Like, it doesn't matter what you think is right. We have every symbol of legitimacy.
And his symbols are powerful.
That's correct. He's correct in that assessment. And that kind of makes Rhaenyra sad. And then she walks up and rips the Hand of the King pen, which he's like really behold. He loves that thing. You know, he was looking at it fly into that.
It and shit.
It flew off into the ocean and he was like,
sometimes, he's like, I look so fucking cool right now. Aww.
Sometimes he like moves his like shoulders around just with the sun. It'll catch
glint.
It. Like, oh,
yeah.
Look at that.
Oh, that thing.
Do you need a hand?
Sorry, did you want a hand?
Don't make me say it again, but I will. And yeah, she rips that off and then she gets what I thought was a letter from Grandmaster Orwell. But it's the page torn from the book.
I remember the scene happening and they showed it in the previously on, but
oh, did they? I really got to start watching this.
I don't remember like the significance of the page.
It was just Alice. It was, that's what's so like striking about it is it was a small moment. It's like a moment of deep friendship. Like if you mention something offhand and then like 9 months later, I buy that for your birthday. Mm-hmm. That's like the moneyest, friendliest thing to do. They were just studying and Rainier was like, no, let's go play. And mm-hmm. she was like, no, I need to learn this. I'm not like you. And then Rainier already knew it all and recited it to her after she ripped out the page.
Didn't she say something to her? Like we make our own rules or something when she,
I think that was part of the context of that conversation. Yeah.
I want to eat cake.
But that was when she was still pretending like she didn't know what was in the book, you know? Yeah. Anyway, that was a really cool. So basically he's saying Alicent still values your friendship. She loves you. She doesn't want blood to be spilled over this. And Rhaenyra seems to like strongly consider that because she does care about the small folk, you know, the realm like her father did. And she has a higher mission in her mind as well with the Song of Ice and Fire.
She needs to unite the realm and not.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know why I said it like that. Yes.
Excellent, Smithers.
And then Daemon's like, nah, screw all that noise, and draws his sword. All of his men draw their swords. Somebody, he says, Eric, bring me a high tower so I can kill him myself, basically, mm-hmm. Which pisses Syrax all the way off. He just knows swords are being drawn.
Mm-hmm. Syrax is like, loud noises.
Yeah.
I don't like them.
And dragons are fun. They're really smart creatures, but if you picture them as dogs, like they get really scary, don't they? Yeah. Like, holy shit, my dog just does dumb ass shit. But if he was a dragon, I'd be like, no. And you see that later with Vhagar, actually, uh-huh. right?
And Eric, no. Yeah.
Because Dobby won't come in sometimes. He's a beagle. Yeah. Dobby,
yep.
Come here.
Syrax does what he wants, yeah, man. But
if you had a dragon, Syrax, come here.
And he's you pooped in the house again.
He's just eating your friends. Stop it. Anyway, I just picture
that.
I'm a good boy, though. You're not a good boy. You killed my brother.
I had to look at Pippin if he perked up at good boy.
Did he?
He is out. He is sleeping.
I'm a good boy. I'm just a dog. We get another Black Council meeting, and this is where Rhaenyra doesn't want the collateral damage of war. And that's where that's becoming clear. And
she doesn't want to rule over ash and bone.
Yeah. Viserys says, or Daemon says, that's your father talking. And she's like, yeah, my father who named me the heir, right?
My father's dead.
And then Daemon's pretty rude. So she says to clear the room and everyone clears out except Rhaenys.
He says, the enemy has declared war. What are you going to do about it?
Right.
He's like, basically he's been trying to like maintain control over the second he found out Viserys was dead, he started scheming. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, okay, we're going to war.
Sweet. I've been bored as shit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Rhaenys takes a very long time to clear the room. She wants all that tea.
She wanted to watch the drama.
She's just got this big grin on her face walking behind her. Like,
don't mind me, kids. I'll just be in the corner.
Don't mind me.
Oh, you wanted me to leave too? Damn.
Chris was saying as we were watching it that she would bring out the Jason Momoa like.
The chair.
The pop-up mm-hmm. chair was like, sits down with popcorn.
She was ready for all that drama. And then in this scene, Rhaenyra says, my oath reaches beyond our personal ambitions. And she's talking about a Song of Ice and Fire, right? And she assumes that Daemon has heard this because at one point he was the heir to the Iron Throne. And only the heir gets to know this, is privy to this knowledge. Daemon chokes Rhaenyra, grabs her by the throat, and says, dreams didn't make us kings. Dragons did. He's a very pragmatic person. He's very self-serving.
He says that his brother was a slave to his omens and portents.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I don't want to hear this nonsense again. Right. He loses himself completely.
Also, he never told me that.
And she said, he never told you, is when she realizes that. Mm-hmm. And like kind of looks down on him in that moment and pities him instead of being angry. That's how I read that. Mm-hmm. And this is apparently Steve was looking it up. This was what a lot of people that watched the leaked version of the episode were so upset about.
At least what I saw. I saw three. This was Wednesday.
I think you're right. I saw this image of him with his hand on her throat a lot.
I saw three tweets on Wednesday where people were like, this is so out of character. I can't believe they did this. This is stupid. And in my head, I was like, I don't remember that happening in this week's episode meeting.
Right.
Last week. Cause I didn't know there was a leak. So I was like, and then also I was like, why the fuck would you spoil this shit? It's like 5 days out from the episode. Yeah, you dicks.
They are dicks.
But yeah, what did you guys think about this?
I thought it was perfectly in his character.
Of course it was in character. I mean, like,
he bashed his last wife's head in with a rock. Why would he not?
No, he does love Rhaenyra. He never loved his last wife.
Yes, so but I mean, like, that's why there, the disparity is so far.
Yeah, he's capable of violence towards women that are close to him. And
his loved ones in general. And like, you know, George Martin has said himself about this character. He's not good nor bad. He is a character capable of great good and vile acts.
Yeah.
At this end. So that's why he's so interesting, right? And we've always known that to be true.
it makes you absolutely fucking despise him in that moment. And it's, you know, extremely effective acting and does a lot of work towards establishing that Rhaenyra really is the only one in the room with a cool head on her shoulders. You know, everybody else, all the men are like, okay, what the fuck are we going to do? Who are we killing next? And she's like, you know, the only one that's trying to be calm about things.
Yes.
And he also, I think,
and it's sad.
Not expressed here except in subtext that he wanted to be he wanted it to be him, and you know, his entire life, and that's well,
and he's so close at this moment. Yeah. Well, at the same time, it's the closest he's ever been. Oh yeah,
he could strangle her and claim himself right then and there.
He kind of has, like, he's the like king paramour or whatever it's called, right?
King consort.
King consort. So he's like almost king, you know. He's like, but I think it's so sad that that element of Rhaenyra not wanting to harm the realm, because, you know, well, I don't want to say that because that's a spoiler because I read the books,
I do think it's an interesting thing. I don't think it's out of character for him. I think it's a very unpleasant side of him that is coming out through what kind of, like what you guys said, there is some jealousy there. There's his own want for ambition. I think there's also a hint of him being upset that his brother didn't tell him, this person that he holds dear and he still kind of feels guilty over, of leaving him behind and letting him die like that. There's a lot in that.
Layers.
There's a lot of subtext in that scene. But like, and like you said, Andy, like, it really kind of, in that moment, he's like a complete bastard, which is all the way back to, you know, episode one of the season. It's like, ah, Daemon's a bastard, but you kind of like him, which you hate to say, like, in this type of moment.
I definitely like Daemon. He's very entertaining. That's why he's very charismatic.
I like the show, because you got these characters that are villains sometimes, but like, all people are villains sometimes, right? Maybe not to this extent, for sure, but
that's what frustrates me about some detractors saying that there's nobody to like in that show, nobody to root for. That's why I don't like the show. And like, that has always been George Martin's stance, is that everybody is capable of vile acts and good, right? And that's why you have Jaime Lannister, the Kingslayer, being a hero at times. And you have people like Robb Stark, who just like are just these super noble, perfect humans that kill thousands of people because they can't keep their dick where it was promised to be. Right.
Right.
And it's a very selfish thing that Robb Stark did that caused a bunch of stuff. I love these characters. That's why that's my favorite fantasy series, because fantasy has the tendency to be so black and white. And so like the evil one and the, like the prophesied white boy that's come to kill him over and over and over and over. And that's why I love this place so much. And I think it's a truism about life in general that people judge themselves by their intentions and the world judges you by your actions. And so that's why the history books look a certain way. And then you get to see like, oh, it was complicated. And that's why I like this show so much.
Yeah. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. The past couple years have been a struggle for many of us. When you're struggling like that, it can be easy to focus on all your problems rather than the ways you can solve them. If this sounds familiar to you, maybe a therapist can change your way of thinking to become a better problem solver. Many of you know that my wife and I recently separated, and I've been silently struggling through that for a while. I wanted some help dealing with the problems that situation brought, so I gave BetterHelp a try. It was honestly such an easy experience. I answered a brief questionnaire, said what I was looking for in a therapist, and before I knew it, I was paired up with a therapist of my choosing. Together, we are making goals to help get the tools I need to become a better problem solver. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, I highly recommend BetterHelp. It's easy, accessible, and most of all, affordable. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/streamingthings.
And now a word from our sponsor. And this week, it's Wondery. Go deeper into the canals of Numenor, the mines of Khazad-dûm, and more with the official The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power podcast. Host Felicia Day. Otherwise known as Nerd Royalty.
The queen herself.
She's from Critical Role. She was in The Guild. Yeah. She was in The Magicians, Supernatural.
Dr. Horrible Sing-Along.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Horrible Sing-Along. Deep cut for only the coolest of cools. Mm-hmm. Yep, she's the host, but also has special guests to provide an inside look at the groundbreaking series and what it took to bring Middle-earth to life. Each episode is a recipe for strong gravy. That's what Disa would say.
She absolutely would.
And features exclusive interviews with the series showrunners, J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, including the very first full breakdown of the incredible season finale. Felicia also goes behind the scenes with the cast and crew to bring you jaw-dropping stories and Easter eggs you won't want to miss. We're talking Mithril. We're talking Elven lore, Valinor, maybe Numenorean. We don't know how deep they go. Hopefully not too deep.
But you can listen to it greedily. Yeah, all right?
Please don't delve too deep.
So rattle your dags, quick sticks, go subscribe to that RSS feed. Do it now.
Absolutely. Watch The Rings of Power on Prime Video and listen to all 8 episodes of the official The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power podcast for free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app now. But we cut to Corlys waking up from his, not coma, but his fever's abated. He's arrived home. Rhaenys is asleep. He tries to jest with her about, I used to whip motherfuckers for falling asleep over here. And she's like, I'm not amused. You abandoned me. Like, we lost our children and you went for another fucking adventure at sea like you always do for 6 years. Which is like, imagine that. Like,
you're 6 years?
6 years. Like, wow. You have kids. They both die. And like, your wife leaves for 6 years on like a cruise. Yeah. Like, Jesus. You'd be pissed.
Well, yeah. It's like it's a little bit of a dangerous cruise.
Yeah. A danger cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. Danger cruise. You know,
back wounded.
It's like a laser tag.
It's like a carnival cruise.
Those are pretty dangerous.
It was a pandemic cruise.
Have you had the food?
Very dangerous. She was loyal to him. Right. Like she held it down. And while he was gone, like there's the scene where Rhaenyra asks what she's going to do. Like, what's House Velaryon going to do? And Rhaeny says, whatever Corlys says, we're going to do. You know what I mean? Like, even though she's so angry, she's so loyal to him. I love her character. Mm-hmm. She tells him Vaemond is dead. He starts to sit up. He's like, shit, what? And then he says, heedless ambition has always been a Velaryon weakness. You were right. And so he's talking about himself as well. You were right, Rhaenys. He's basically saying, I'm Sisyphus. I flew too close to the sun. Mm-hmm. That's Sisyphus, right? Or is he the one with the rock?
No, you're thinking of...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Oh shit, what's his name? The one with the wings.
Yeah, it's not Sisyphus.
Icarus. Icarus. Sisyphus is the one with the rock.
Yes.
And he says, we shall declare for no one. So now he's saying what Rhaenys has always wanted. We'll just go home, raise our grandchildren. It's going to be great. But Rhaenys says it's too late for that, basically, right? And then this is where I said, and I heard Steve say, I wouldn't call her an ardent supporter. She stands up for Rhaenyra. You know, Corlys says, hey, she was complicit in the death of our son. And she's trouble follows her wherever she goes. And she's like, Rhaenyra is the only one holding the realm together right now, alone in a sea of men begging for war. Like, not only, and she's the only reason House Velaryon pledges to go with Rhaenyra. That's why I was saying that she used an ardent supporter, because in private with her husband, she compliments her and says, like, I think she's doing a bang up job. And so it recontextualizes all the smirks and looks that she's been giving Rhaenyra throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, there was a war of admiration, I think.
Yeah, but if she was an ardent supporter, she would have just kneeled. I'm thinking Rhaenys is actually being very smart. Like, I think she wants to be her supporter, but she's also just watching how things play out and has not made her decision up to that point.
Sure.
Until she can talk with her husband. Cause she does want to be like, hey,
yes,
dude, where are we at on this? I've been holding it down. What are your thoughts?
We still got boats. I mean, mm-hmm. do we do boats still? Like do she doesn't boats? Know. Is I don't know. You've been gone a while.
Vaemon took care of the boats and he's, you know, he's not quite himself lately.
He's got a terrible headache, a terrible wound.
A terrible wound.
And Lord Corlys arrives at Dragonstone. He gets announced by Eric, who is just so relieved to have something to do in that room.
I'm sorry. The blocking of that was so funny because Eric's in the middle of the room. Like he's at the table and he's the one that announces who's coming into the room. So one of two things either happened. Either the Velaryons are up there waiting a few minutes as a messenger goes downstairs and whispers to Eric that they're coming. Or Eric is just in that room fucking bullseyeing that door in case anybody walks in to go, them, they're here.
That guy,
Lord Velaryon's here. Did my job.
Nailed it. Now, I would guess there's like a, excuse me, there's a messenger that like runs when they get into the like the actual door to the keep itself. Runs all the way up there like, hey, they're coming. Yeah, he's got to be swift. Like a raven or a dragon.
That's where Mushroom has been this whole time.
Yeah. Well, he was in that one episode, supposedly. I think it was confirmed by the showrunners. I didn't know it was confirmed, but he was the one playing music.
Yeah.
But yeah, he arrives. He says, where's Daemon? And I like this little moment. Again, I took from this that he was saying, you guys made sure Daemon wasn't here for my arrival in case there was any drama. And I'm smirking because I know that's what you did, even though I'm not actually mad. My brother sucked. Anywho's all right. And then he's like basically saying, so where you at? What's up? You got any like friends or just mostly enemies? Or would you guys see you got the table with the chess pieces and shit? Got the lights on. That's cool. And she says, well, I hope to get Baratheon and the Starks and blah, blah, blah. And he said, hope is the fool's ally. And they bandy words and it's fucking.
Dude, I love the bandy.
Lovely.
Words. Yeah, dude.
They go, I forgot how fire it was, but it was fire because she says they've swore an oath to my house. And he says, so did the Hightowers. How'd that work out for you? And then she said, as did you. And
he's like, true point.
And he's like, touche. He pledges House Velaryon in support of Rhaenyra. And then
he reveals some good news.
But then she says thank you to you and thank you to Rhaenys, who smiles very kindly as well, mm-hmm. But says that she won't be the first to act. And Corlys is like, really? I don't agree.
Can I change my mind?
Never mind, Z's. What do you say about good news?
Well, he says like his adventures in the Stepstones have.
Oh, yes.
The garrison the Stepstones this time.
They own the Narrow Sea now, so they literally can choke King's Landing via sea.
Yes, they won't get any supplies and stuff. The Stepstones are now back in the hands of the House Velaryon. And Jace says, well, so they say that we should send messages, or I think it was Grandmaster Gerardus, or Maester. Is it Grandmaester? We can assume it's actually Grandmaester now. Gerardus says, hey, I'll send ravens to the Starks, to House Arryn, to Storm's End, to see if we can win them to your cause. And Jace speaks up and says, we should carry those messages personally. Dragons are more convincing and faster than ravens, right? And then I think it's Corlys that says, it's a good idea. Young prince.
Word.
And so Rhaenyra relents. She says, I will send Jace to House Arryn, the Eyrie, and then to Winterfell to treat with House Stark. And then I'm going to send Lux to Storm's End. And it's so tragic because she believes Storm's End to be the safer option because it's a shorter flight. He's actually got Baratheon blood in him. Mm-hmm. She's like, he'll be there and back mm-hmm. in a day. My little boy gonna be good. He's gonna be good. But it's really cold in Winterfell. The Eyrie's very high up. Jane's a little iffy. I'm gonna send Jace there.
Well, he's also got the bigger dragon, so it could make that distance.
That's in the book, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the book, they mentioned that the bigger dragon has to go on the longer flight. That's right. That's right.
But it is also the safer one. And that's part of the reason
why. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's so sad.
They just assume that the Baratheons are just like, oh, yeah, dope. Yeah, cool.
Oh, I've been waiting. Yeah.
You didn't need to send anybody. I see the banners out there. I put little dragons on my stags.
What if they're like, you could have just sent a raven. I don't.
Yeah, for real.
They're like, oh, we thought these were more convincing.
That's the Westerosi version of someone who calls instead of texts.
Yeah.
Andy, we send in ravens all day.
Rhaenyra and her sons is the next scene. She makes them promise not to fight and swear on the seven-pointed star, which I believe is the name of the Bible in that world, if I recall. And they fly off.
The good book is what they call it.
They call it the good book.
The good book.
Daemon goes to lure and master Vermithor, and presumably, what's Alison's dragon's name? Silverwing. And that's a really cool scene where he kind of like
coolest shots ever,
ever. In ever. All of Game of Thrones history, because there's
all of film and TV history.
There you go.
Fucking insane.
I love it.
It's so dope.
And because there's this moment where I thought, because he's singing in Valyrian, he lays down the torch. I thought that the outline of Vermithor was smoke. Like it was so subtle until it blew fire and illuminated itself. And I got goosebumps thinking about it during the moment. I don't even want to tell you what happened to my body. It was incredible. I looked at Andy like, dude, that was dope.
It was insane.
It was gorgeous. Stunning. Anyway, you guys have anything else to say about Vermithor?
It looked beautiful.
It looked beautiful, baby.
It was incredible.
Beautiful baby dragon.
And fucking Daemon has some pipes.
He does.
All we can sing.
Singing some good Valyrian. We cut to Storm's End, Steve.
We finally get to see it.
I know you were excited, my guy.
It's like one of the only, it's like it was one of the last like major castles in Westeros that we have not seen.
Yeah.
And they gave us such a cock tease a couple episodes ago when we got to see the inside of it.
Yeah.
But then we don't get to see the exterior.
No establishing shot.
And so it turns out it's like the Florence Y'all Water Tower just poked up on a hill with a bunch of waves around it.
Well, that's pretty accurate because it is supposed to be just a big cylindrical castle that's pretty narrow because it's the castle that survives the storm, right? No other castle could survive the storms that ravage Storm's End, but through this engineering and architecture, it does.
But yeah, Storm's End was beautiful, very stormy. I didn't see that coming.
No, it definitely lived up to its name, that's for sure.
So stormy. How do they go crops there? I don't know, man. It's too wet. I wouldn't move there.
Mm-mm. During the courting tour, they got some good weather because I don't remember it raining that scene.
The only rain they had was Rhaenyra. You know what I'm saying? Luke, I liked Luke writing. Was it Vermax?
Arax.
Arax. That's right. Luke writing Arax looks so real, like an uncomfortable, because he's really young and he was just kind of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do the thing. I don't like it.
Going too fast. Like I just got that vibe and I thought that was, it made me like, feel you're exhilarated.
15 practicing for your temps. Like,
yeah, holy shit. I don't know how to parallel park this dragon.
Him getting on the interstate for the first time. You know what I'm saying?
And he sees that Vhagar's there, which means that Aemon, and Vhagar is so massive. God, and just like it was like, I expected John Williams' score from Jurassic Park to kick in. Not the happy one. Na, 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 na. Like Laura Dern just stood up in armor and was like, wow.
Oh, dude, don't give me things I want. Put Laura Dern in this show with don't a suit give of armor. Me things I want. Hell yeah.
It does sound. You remember that song from the Oscars ceremony that was just like, Laura Dern? Yeah, I love that.
She's the best.
But yeah, Vhagar's there. Aemon's there. And Luke's like, oh, shit, this is going to suck. But he goes in anyway. He wants to do his duty. Aemon turns as soon as he walks in the hall, just as thunder strikes and you see his eye patch and
he's got that dope fucking jacket.
He just looks like the best anime villain you've ever seen.
He does.
Dude.
And Lord Boros is a dick. He won't even get up out of his chair. He's like, what's up, little dork? Luke's like, I have a message from the queen.
Hey, nerd.
Oh, it's weird. I just had an envoy from the king. Is it king or queen? The dragon house is all bullshit, I guess.
Yeah, the house of the dragon does not seem to know who rules it.
No, it does not. He's got a point there.
He's offering me brides and betrothals.
What do you got?
What you got? I can't read. Maybe you can offer me a tutor.
He receives the message. He's like, where's the bloody maester? Turns out he can't read. He says, apparently the letter says that he's being sent to remind him of his oath. He takes umbrage with that. He says, remind me of mine.
remind.
He turns into Gimli. And he basically says, at least they brought shit. Like he's offered me betrothals. Which of my daughters are you going to wed? And he looks over at his daughters and says, well, I'm not eligible to marry any of them. I'm already betrothed. And he says, so you bring nothing. Tell your mother the Lord of Storm's End is not a dog. She can whistle up whenever she needs to or something like that. And then he starts to leave, but Aemon calls him back. Aemon takes off his patch. It looks dope. I got to be honest. He's got that blue eyeball.
Sapphire eye.
The sapphire eye.
And if you look in the show intro, his little sigil in the show intro is a sapphire.
Nice touch.
Very cool.
Helena's sigil is a spider. And I think Aegon's is like a
dildo
crown.
It's just a dick and balls.
Yeah.
And I think it's a dragon egg and a crown, maybe. I might be remembering that wrong.
Yeah, he demands that Luke puts out his own eye. And he's like, I decline. And Boros is, or no, and Aemon says, well, then you're a craven then, as well as a traitor. And it's like, really? No one would do that, bro. Like, not even a brave. And why? Like, that's a bitch move. No. Oh, okay. Don't hurt me. And then Boros stands up, says, not in my hall. He doesn't want to be, no matter what happens.
He came as an envoy. Yeah. We're not going to kill people we treat in our own halls.
He's got that going for him, at least.
Because that kind of falls under the rule that the Freys broke in the original Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't break bread with them, but yeah, it's
no
still,
salt and bread, man.
It's very frowned upon. Outside, Luke runs, he basically flees. Let's be honest, it's pouring down raining at this point. He tries to calm RX. The storm is going like crazy. He flies off finally. And then we see him flying alone, but uneasy, looking around a bunch. And we see this giant shadow of Vhagar flying above.
Oh, fuck. Like, man. 30 times the size.
So much more. Bigger. It's like, RX is toothless from How to Train Your Dragon. And then like that big monster they fight at the end of the first movie is Vhagar. That's the size difference. And like RX is basically the size of his head.
Yeah, seriously. Vhagar is a naval battle, like helicarrier, and RX is a dinghy.
Yeah. You ever seen Dunkirk?
I have seen Dunkirk.
Yeah. He's one of those.
He's a dinghy.
Like the just in case anybody doesn't know what a dinghy
remember
is.
Remember the dinghy from Dunkirk?
That was my idea.
That's
what he looks like.
That's a solid point of reference.
Remember that specific dinghy from Dunkirk? Yeah, baby.
Everyone knows the dinghy from Dunkirk.
And, you know, they go on a merry chase, except without the merry. And
merry
chase. I thought this was very interesting. This is going to anger some people. I loved it. The whole idea that you know, Aemond was going to bully him. He's going to hurt him for sure. He would never in 1,000 years have thought to kill him. And that Luke was going to hide and been fucking Eric's for some reason lost his mind and blew a bunch of fire at a dragon. He's like, ah,
fucking mountains coming after me.
Yeah. So he blows fire in his face. And once he does that, Aemond loses control of Vhagar. And Vhagar, of his own accord, chomps.
Of her own accord. She's a she-dragon. So.
Correct. I keep having this argument with people online. I guess I'm in the wrong. Because dragons don't have gender.
Well, they're called she-dragons in the book.
Yeah, that's fair.
they call Vhagar a girl dragon in the book, but they also say that some maesters say that a dragon can switch sexes.
And they can, yeah.
This is bullshit, says the guy that's writing it. But
yeah, so that's what I'm
going with. Move, am I right?
Yeah. No. No. That's all I have. That's my rebuttal.
No.
So she takes it upon herself to snap RX in half. It doesn't really care that.
I don't know if that's snapping in half.
Pieces. Dude, yeah. Not an even half. Just chomp down.
Dude, ate like three quarters chunks of her and then just like some wing pieces fell. It's crazy.
Yeah. And Aemon looks down like, shit.
Shit.
I think I just started a war. Mom? I think I started a war. This is on me.
Remember,
I was just going to take his eyeball. It wasn't even a big deal.
And I mean, I knew he wasn't going to really do it. And I was just going to spook him a little bit.
Yeah. Who among us has not flown our dragons at one another in jest?
How terrifying is that? Like at one moment you're flying high in the clouds. It's a beautiful sight. And the next moment you're just gone.
It's so cool. Cause well, honestly, like, I think he had all the storm and then they get above the storm.
Yeah. They get above the storm.
So beautiful. And
cause honestly, here was my thought. I gotta be honest. The camera's not on. I gotta be honest.
Your camera's on.
Oh, hi.
Nope. Yours froze too. Am I the last one left standing? Sir. I am the king of YouTube.
I really felt like the showrunners had fabricated the storm. Oh, it's like, oh, it storms in. It'll be so much easier for CG, right? And that was all intentional to make it kind of visually muddied so it'd be a little cheaper, or at least look a little better.
No, in the book, they say that it was stormy. Otherwise, Luke could have outrun him because his dragon was faster than Vhagar's.
Oh, unfortunate.
But the storm was like hampering his ability to fly.
Yeah.
Hampering.
And hammering.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, and then they flew above it and I was like, no shit. But yeah, that's very, very sad. At least it was probably a painless death unless he's just in his mouth, like melting in saliva.
Yeah.
Let's choose not to believe that.
Yeah.
Then we're going to land and just wait for Vhagar to pass a movement.
And then, by the way, Aemond was speaking Valyrian as well, which I should have known, but I didn't expect that for some reason. I thought he'd be like a further from his heritage or whatever.
Oh, no, Aemond's all about that heritage.
That's true.
He's the one who takes it very seriously.
He does say some stuff in English, though. He's like, no, Vhagar, no.
Heed me or something.
Yeah. Aegar's the one who'd be like, sit.
Mm-hmm. Aegon?
Sit. Who'd I say?
Aegar.
Oh, made something up. Aegon, sit. Sunfire, stop it. Stop it. No.
That's why I don't ride you.
He's not listening.
And then the final scene of the episode, Daemon is bringing the news to Rhaenyra as she runs the Black Council that her son has been killed. And he pulls her away privately. We just see their backs and there's like a hearth fire and then like a little stumble.
Oh, it's so beautifully done.
Oh, God. And then she turns to the camera and you see the rage in her face. And I cannot express, I'm a verbose gentleman, right? I cannot express adequately how much I love this show and all the tiny moments. Like the fact that Aemond didn't murder Luke intentionally, it was like losing control of his dragon while he was being a dick. Like that's the kind of like, if you've ever been in a situation in your life, I have, where things get out of your control. You were just trying to be a little dick and now you're in major trouble.
Sure.
Like one time we vandalized a whole suburb and threw eggs at a bunch of houses and stuff. And I knew it was wrong, but I was like, oh, I'm sowing wild oats, you know? And then fast forward.
What were you doing with those eggs? What type of eggs are we throwing?
Sowing your wild oats, huh?
You know, when you're out fucking your friends around town.
much like that, this metaphor, sometimes life gets away from you.
Vandalizing that ass. Well, I lost the plot on that one. But I was just going to say, I can distinctly remember standing with the police on somebody's front lawn the next morning, calling my mommy, you know, and just being like, damn, what did I do? You know,
how'd I let things get this far?
Because she was so sweet when I called her, like, hey, honey, hey, don't you have fun? You want to stay another night? You know, and I was like, no, don't be cool. Bad news. I was so wild out. What?
Yeah, we were egging a house. Oh, okay.
You don't understand what that means, do you? I don't think so, Mom. Anyway, God, I misspoke. But yes, I love the like the truth of the bias, the truth of this show versus the bias of the book is how I view it. And I really, really dig it. And it's so sad that she wanted to keep the realm together. She was the last thing she wanted to do was start a war. She was taking every pain to not do that. And now all bets are off because she killed her, you know, her son's dead. And that was like her baby boy, too. Well, nobody's seen Joffrey in a while. Yeah.
Joffrey was in this episode.
Was he?
Yeah.
And she also at this point,
he flew a tiny dragon to like the other Dragonstone Island. Like they gave him a fake job.
Okay, mommy, I want to help. I'm Pippin the Joffrey.
She also has two children by Daemon at this point.
Aegon the Younger and Viserys.
Yes. Yes. All right. That brings us to our dragon egg segment. I stole a couple of both of yours while I was talking accidentally. Steve, lay them on me, baby.
Okay, so really the only dragon eggs that I have was I kind of thought it would be good to kind of break down and go through the dragons in this world and who rides what and where they are. So I wrote down all the dragons. So on the green side, we have Sunfire, who is Aegon's. Vhagar, Aemond's, obviously. There's Dreamfire, Helaena's. Dreamfire is the one, you remember when Aegon went into the dragon pit originally and there's a dragon in there that blew fire? Mm-hmm. That's Dreamfire.
That was Aemond.
Did I say Aemond?
You said Aegon. It doesn't matter. I just make sure.
Whatever. They're
while we're clarifying.
All the same fucking names.
Yeah. Very similar letters.
There's also Tessarion, the Blue Queen, who is written by Daeron. That is a character that has not appeared yet, but
to exist.
He is the youngest of the four children of Alicent. But he's off in Old Town squiring, I think, at this point in the story. There's also
sowing his wild oats.
There's also Morgul and Shrikos, I think is how you pronounce that. That is Jahera and Jaharis's dragon. They are very, very tiny baby dragons that are practically useless. They are the dragons of Helaena's kids.
Now on the black side, we have Cyrax, obviously Rhaenyra's, Meleys, Rhaenys's, Caraxes, the big redly boy. Mm-hmm. That's Daemon's. Vermax is Jacerys. Arax, RIP, was Lucerys's, RIP. Taraxes is, we thought Luke rode Taraxes. No, that is Joffrey's dragon. Taraxes is Joffrey's dragon. Moon Dancer is ridden by Bela. Stormcloud, Stormcloud is the dragon that is kind of, I don't know, betrothed to Aegon the Younger. I don't know what you call that when bonded with.
Yeah, promised to.
Yeah, so Stormcloud, another baby tiny dragon, promised to Aegon the Younger. And then there's also Seasmoke, who was ridden by Laenor, but Laenor is gone. And so we don't know, what does that mean? Because in the lore...
He's riderless.
In the lore, dragons have that psychic bond with their riders. So it's often like, well, what's going to happen with Seasmoke? Because if Laenor's still out there, Seasmoke, in theory, according to the books, isn't going to just let anyone else ride him.
Well, my headcanon is that Seasmoke is kind of dumb when it comes to dragons. And so they just told him he was dead. And he was like, for real?
Dang, that was my homie.
Oh, super sad. I'm going to miss Larry. And they're like, it was Laenor. And he's like, whatever.
I actually have a very bold prediction for what's going to happen to Seasmoke, but I can't really get into it because it gets into spoilery territory.
Tell me off air.
I'll tell you. Maybe in the mailbag episode, we can do like a special section that's like spoiler for the books.
Super, and
we can
get spoiler super section.
Yeah, like if you don't want to know anything about the books, turn off now because we're going to get into it. But that'll be possibly next week. And then the other dragons that are out and about in the world that could be claimed by one side or the other, we have Sheepstealer, Vermithor, Silverwing, the Cannibal, and Grey Ghost is also out and about in the world. And some of those...
Sheepstealer's a beast.
Sheepstealer's a beast. Vermithor is a beast as well, so yeah. Silverwing. The Cannibal is a nasty motherfucker.
Yeah, he eats other dragons, hence the name.
Yeah, you do not want to mess with the Cannibal.
Mm-hmm. And how they find riders is super cool. Andy, is that all your eggs?
Yeah, that's all I had.
Andy, do you have any dragon eggs?
Well, we already said it, but the war table is stands Baratheon's fuck pad. Mm. So that was in there. And so I just had to say the words. But yeah, the meeting on the bridge was a big one for me because it recreates the sequence that we had before. Even literally with, for a moment, Rhaenyra being standing with Otto facing Daemon, and, you know, guards on either side. And, then she walks past everybody like a fucking boss and goes and stands with Daemon. It was a really cool mirror of that sequence. And then, even there was, Caraxes was in that sequence, right? Like when they're meeting on that bridge, and doesn't Caraxes fly over?
Yeah. So yes.
So yeah, in this
was Caraxes in this scene?
Not in this scene. Oh, he was in the original scene.
In the original one with Cyrax,
where he has the egg. And then Cyrax was in this scene and the new one. So I thought the way they mirrored that was beautiful. And
should have gotten Caraxes.
Yes, as much noodly boy as possible.
Yeah, give him all the screen time.
And there was one that you said, we started to allude to earlier, which was when Daemon, it's just like a slight change from the books. In the book, when Daemon crowns Rhaenyra, you know, he names her Lady Protector of the Realm. I'm not sure what
he says the whole stylized,
but he
in the book, he withheld a piece.
He withheld just Protector of the Realm. He names himself Protector of the Realm. And then she is, you know, the queen of the
Andals and the first man and the Rhoynar.
So that was an interesting change, because the way that they portray him is how the assumption of, what he believes that title holds, the way he acts in this throughout this episode, by being the one that does all the war planning and stuff, he's acting like the Protector of the Realm and stuff. And I thought that was pretty solid. Do you have any?
Just one small one that just to make sure that's clear, that everybody understands and knows how neat it is, that the crowns that they're wearing is like the crown that Rhaenyra wears is the one that Viserys wore. That's the one that Jaehaerys wore.
The conciliator.
I like the gold filigree one. Whereas the uglier crown that Aegon the Second is wearing is the crown that Aegon the Conqueror wore. It's the one that Aenys and Maegor wore. You know, it was Jaehaerys kind of invented the nicer looking crown to kind of fit in more. And so Aegon the Second has the Conqueror's crown.
The crown for war.
And yeah, they mentioned Jaehaerys briefly, which is one of my favorite Targaryen kings, in a bunch of houses and stuff that I won't get into. So let's get into our Valyrian Steel segment, our top three favorite moments of the episode. Steve, what is your number three?
My number three scene is when Eric brings back Viserys's crown to everybody.
I'm glad you brought that up. I love that scene.
This whole episode, especially in the first half of it, is really, really amazing in terms of like kind of setting this foreboding, like, oh, things aren't good. There's just this vibe and that's so great. And we go through this awful, you know, birthing scene, everything's rough. And the first ray of hope this episode really has is when Eric comes with that crown, because it shows like, oh, we have allies from the other side, because he defects to them. And also he's bringing Viserys's crown, symbol, which is a huge symbol of, you know, this is, you know, our lineage. This is my brother. This is my dad. And you get to see what this symbol means to both Daemon and Rhaenyra. And just seeing Rhaenyra get that crown and then Daemon actually like kneels to her, like that was a really big deal. And then it caps off with everyone kneeling to her except for Rhaenys, which adds just that little twinge of like, ooh, intrigue.
And the score, like the violins.
Yeah.
It was killing me not to put this on my Valyrian Steels.
The score has been great throughout this whole show, but I feel like this episode was probably the best, I think. What it had like overall the best score, I think.
Would you say it's better than Bear McCreary's?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm just kidding. I know you hated that score. Andy, what is your number three?
My number three is the meeting on the bridge with Rhaenyra, Daemon, and Otto. Just the boss move of Rhaenyra landing behind the people that are there to usurp her and walking through them like they're nothing, going to stand next to her husband and be like, "No, I'm the queen." I thought that...
And that little smile that Daemon has, like, ah... I love when you fly in.
Mm-hmm. And Otto is crushing it in this sequence.
Yes.
And, I love,
I've practiced this in the mirror for a very long time.
I love like how Aemon tries to like force Eric with an E to take Otto. And like you keep seeing Eric and Arik like glancing at each other throughout this sequence. And like Arik with an A is like, got like starting to draw his sword and stuff like ready to attack. And it's really, really cool. Yeah. Great sequence.
Awesome sequence as well. My number three is the stumble. When Daemon,
oh my God, so good,
tells Rhaenyra at the end. I originally had this as my number one. I've moved these three around multiple times before we started. So they're just solidified now just because I had to stop. But this is my number three. It was such a power, like you don't even see her face and you can tell what's being, we don't hear a word of dialogue and it is destruction of your soul knowing what she's being told. And you can see the precise moment that she's told it, just because of Emma Darcy's, you know, body language. They're just such an incredible actor. I can't stand it. Yeah. That's my number three. Steve, you're number two.
My number two is, it's just a shot really. And it's just the shot of Vhagar in the storm, like right when Luke lands in the courtyard of Storm
yeah. End,
and he's walking up, and you see like the lightning in the background and it makes the silhouette of Vhagar, and Vhagar, she just kind of like slowly looms around.
Oh, crusty, ugly ass bitch this, looms up.
Yeah. This action ass dragon with IBS kind of, did you hear that story?
No.
So I read this story. I think it might've been Joanna Robinson that was talking about it, but they were interviewing the sound engineers for Hot D, and they said originally like the sound engineers are trying to come up with unique sounds for all the dragons, you know, cause they all have their own individual personalities. They're like, okay, Vhagar, she's really, really fucking ancient. She's really fucking old. What do old people have? IBS. So, sound engineers did their first pass through of all the dragon noises, Vhagar had farty noises because she was,
oh, I did hear that.
She had flatulence, and which I think is so funny because it's like, that's actually really, really well thought out, probably very real to life, but I don't want to see or hear more
dragon farts. Would have made her far less terrifying.
Can you imagine like when it like bit, like it like chomped Luke and Arax, you just hear like,
dude, I want the fan edit of this. It'd be fucking amazing.
Steve, make it. Go viral, baby.
Andy, what's your number two?
Let's see here. My number two is that shot of Daemon in the dragon pit going through and singing to, we're not sure yet. We're pretty sure it's a little dragon pit. And like Chris said, like there's this incredible shot with Aemon real small in the very bottom of the frame, or Daemon very small in the bottom of the frame, and just black in front of him. And it seems like there's smoke or something there. And then whichever dragon that is starts spitting fire Verbithor. All up in the air and around him and stuff. It's the most gorgeous shot I've seen in fucking years. It was incredible.
It's my number two as well. It was stunning shot. Stunning shot. Steve, your number one moment.
My numero uno is the Corlys Velaryon versus Rhaenyra word battle. Nice. At the painted table. I don't know. That was like the most Game of Thrones.
We were all like jumping up and down about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's smacking you down, Corlys.
What are you going to say to that?
And I just love Steve Toussaint's portrayal of Corlys Velaryon. He has like such regality to him. And I think in the books that character is supposed to be like 76 at the time of this story. Like he's supposed to be fucking old. And I just love how he's the most battle experienced, world experienced person in that room. Easily. That dude's been to YT, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a real
life, home,
which is a real place in this world.
It is.
But
the Golden Empire.
Just seeing him kind of get batted down by Rhaenyra at his own game. And then he's just kind of like, well played, m'lady. Mm-hmm. Here are my ships. Like, oh, it was a feel good moment.
Yeah.
Feel good moment. I liked it.
Andy, your number one moment of the finale.
My number one moment has to be the chase sequence between Luke and Aemon, Erickson, Vhagar, especially that shot with Vhagar looming large in the clouds above.
What do you fucking do?
Dude. Like, holy shit, the intense, disparity between, what they're working with in this situation is fucking unreal. And that shot encapsulates it fucking perfectly. And, the whole sequence is great. Like, Aemon is a fucking prick, and he's, laughing and shit while he's chasing around. Like, the way this scene played out was so much different than what I had thought that it was going to be when we were going into it. I expected this straightforward direct interpretation of what the books gave us. I thought it was just going to be Luke's trying to get away. He can't get away fast enough. And, it is what it is. But instead we got this kind of toying with it's his nephew and that he does hate in a lot of ways, but he's not intending to really do the damage that he ultimately does. And the way that it makes so much more sense for them to not always have complete control over these ancient mystical beasts, and for it to play out the way that it did is fucking genius. And it makes sense why it would be interpreted differently by the maesters that wrote the histories and stuff. It would 100% be Luke tried to leave, Aemon chased him and killed him with the bigger dragon. Because how could they know that he didn't quite have control of the dragon at that moment? How could he know that Aemon was bereft for a split second? Like, oh my fucking God, I just killed my nephew. The sequence was incredible. And then it leads into that moment where we get the silent reveal to Rhaenyra that she just lost her son, and the beautiful backshot portrayal that we get from that. Yeah. So good.
I think they found out that happened. did Aemon go back to the Baratheon Storm's End?
I expect this.
Dude, I fucked up.
Yeah.
I fucked up.
I would say Storm's End, it was their duty to, to relay that information or even if he went back and told Alicent, and somebody's going to have to tell her, right? He didn't return. My number one moment is actually the moment between Rhaenys and Corlys, where she stuck up for Rhaenyra.
Ooh, good one.
I can't explain it. I mean, I was so hyped for that moment because I didn't see it coming. I knew that they weren't obviously going to go home and just raise the grandchildren, but I didn't see that Rhaenys would come so staunchly to the defense of Rhaenyra. And then the way that they cut to her talking at the Black Council while she said, she's the only one trying to hold the realm together. And at first I kind of cocked my head, what do you mean? And then I understood, what she meant by that and what was going on, because everybody else just wants war.
That's cool. And in that shot, I think they cut to Rhaenyra at the table and she's not talking. She's just kind of sitting there thinking, and there's groups of men.
And they're all Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And that was awesome. It's everybody just talking around and none of their opinions matter. But anywho, well, that's my number one that finishes off our Valyrian steals. Our final segment is the Mummer's Dragon, the MVP of the finale of House of the Dragon. My answer is very predictable. Steve, Who are you giving the Streamy to, the Mummer's Dragon Award?
This is a hard one for me. But I'm gonna say something. It might be incredibly controversial, but I'm gonna say it because, you know, it's my show. Damn it, I can say what I want. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm giving it to Matt Smith, just because there was, I think, of all the characters in the show, in this episode in particular, his performance was the one that had the most depth, layers, controversial stances on.
Least amount of dialogue.
And he's like, literally, like, from every, and you mentioned it before when Rhaenys comes in and she just says, hey, Viserys is dead. Just watching Matt Smith in the background is like, he's doing a lot with a very little. And then just the way, like, anger roils up within him, and then, like, you see the vulnerability come out, and then the anger just flares up even more. He is just, I mean, all season he's been this subtle, casual, just stealer of scenes, right? And I don't think I've given it to him this season yet, and that's not a reason to just give it to him now. I really was impressed with just how much subtext was, and literally was dripping in every little lean of this guy, you know?
yeah, absolutely. I agree. Andy.
I have to give it to Emma Darcy. They had to do so many disparate extremes throughout this episode. We have like, the fear, we have the loving mother, and it, like the little triple kiss was just a chef's kiss moment for me. The childbirth sequences, or the stillbirth, and you know, the inner turmoil when she discovers that her father died, and the and that she's queen, and that her birthright has been stolen from her. All of the like internal struggle that Emma portrays in those moments, or physical struggle in the stillbirth sequence sense. It's all conveyed so realistically, and yet they still maintain the grace of the character of Rhaenyra, because Rhaenyra does still, despite all of these things, still have like this sense of duty. And even, for example, when Rhaenyra has to call her sons to impart the news of what's going on, literally while she is giving birth, it's crazy. And the performance that Emma gives is absolutely fucking phenomenal for that, but especially for the performance that we didn't get to see with Rhaenyra walking towards the hearth and being told the news that she lost her younger son, and the little stumble and the look of like severe loss and rage that we get, that is the final shot of the season. It's fucking unreal. Has to go to Emma.
I agree. I'm going to give it to Emma Darcy. They are tour de force throughout this whole season, but specifically, I just wanted to cap the finale.
Steve, I have to tell you, you now also have frozen all three of us.
Frozen boys.
Yeah.
Together in unity with frozen boys.
Well, that caps off the finale coverage. Don't forget that you can subscribe to our Patreon at any time at patreon.com/streamingthings and get a bunch of extra episodes and content from us there. Just support the show. You can support us for free anytime by rating and reviewing the show wherever you're listening to this. We also have a YouTube where we're sometimes not frozen. You can follow us on Twitter at streamthingpod. And you can also email the show at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Look forward to our mailbag coverage.
Email us before Friday.
Yes. The House of the Dragon. That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, first of its name. New patron shout outs. Thank you all.
Well, guys, I've got great news for you. We have new patrons to thank.
Yes.
Well, let's give a shout out to the people who joined up and became members of the Streaming Things family this month. First, in the Try Before You Deny section, we have Stanton and Valerie.
Stanton and Valerie, man, thank you so much. And never forget, just try before you deny, man.
Our new Marty B VIP producers include Ryan Bigger, Maggie, HHS Teacher, Hailey B, Abby Vollmer, Florida Josh, Christopher Corelli, and Alex.
Florida Josh, are you the man that all those articles have been written about?
Next up, we have our chocolate pudding producers. We have Tile, Jillian Sloan, Alex Lembeck, Jennifer Lynn Itzvon, Lauren Hartzier, Morgan Quimby, Ryan J. Poole, Misa McDaniel.
Is that like a Jar Jar Binks thing?
Yeah,
Misa McDaniel.
Misa give you some. Bongo.
The planet core.
Erica Swanson, Courtney Kilpack, Michelle, Katie, Joe Velez, Barry, Jenna, Melanie Bordelone, Alicia Martinez, Isis, Amy S., and Jennifer Hardy. It's not that ISIS. We also have some Friends Don't Lie producers that joined this month. That is Claire Cumming Herrero and Jenna. And then we cannot forget the people who upgraded the Patreon. So these are people who were at lower tiers and decided, hey, you know what? I'm gonna shoot for the distance. I'm gonna go higher tier.
I'm going for speed.
Yeah, they got one of those little guns that shoot dollar bills, and they just like shot it right all over us.
Mm-hmm.
First up, upgrading to the Try Before You Deny tier, we have. Upgrading to the Marty B VIP section because they knew it was so cool. There's a Nina in there. We've got Maria, Ali Awald, Rachel Malloy, and Tony Dare.
I, Tony Dare, you guys to upgrade further.
Well, well, one person took you up on that. They upgraded to the chocolate pudding tier, and that is Jenna.
Jenna, welcome and Jenna. Thank you. You have found the chocolate pudding much. And keep it going, man. Just keep it. Stay in the family. We need you here.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.